The example of the bull moose helps nice guys get the sex they want. In nature, the alpha male and the bull moose don't sit around trying to figure out what will make the girls like them. They are just themselves, fierce, strong, competitive, and sexually proud. Because they are what they are and do what they do, prospective mates are attracted. As in nature, the greatest aphrodisiac is self-confidence. As recovering nice guys become comfortable just being themselves, they begin to look more attractive. Self-respect, courage, and integrity look good on a man. As recovering nice guys chart their own path and put themselves first, people respond. I've listened to recovering nice guys tell of selfishly putting their needs first and then being surprised when a seemingly unavailable partner expresses a desire to be sexual. One client who hadn't had sex with his wife in 14 months shared in a nice guy group that he was tired of listening to his wife complain about her work problems. That night, for the first time in 15 years of marriage, he told his wife that he was too tired to listen. Even though she was initially angry, later that night she asked him if he wanted to make love. A force of nature. The very thing that makes sex so exciting is exactly what makes it so terrifying. Sex is powerful, chaotic, and wild. It crackles with cosmic energy. It draws us like a moth to a flame. As recovering nice guys release their sexual shame and fear, take responsibility for their own pleasure, refuse to settle for bad sex, and practice being just who they are, they put themselves in the position to embrace this cosmic force without fear or reservation. This is when the sex really gets good. Chapter 9. Get the life you want. Discover your passion and purpose in life, work, and career. If there were no limits on your life, where would you live? What would you be doing in your leisure time? What kind of work would you be engaged in? What would your home and surroundings look like? As you look at the reality of your life, ask yourself two questions. First, are you creating the life you want? Second, if not, why not? In general, the nice guys with whom I have worked have been intelligent, industrious, and competent individuals. While most are at least moderately successful, the majority have not lived up to their full abilities or potential, nor have they created the kind of life they really desire. Since nice guys spend so much time seeking approval, hiding their flaws, playing it safe, and doing the opposite of what works, it makes sense that they would typically fall short of being all they can be. This is perhaps the greatest tragedy wrought by the nice guy syndrome. Countless intelligent and talented men wasting their lives and wallowing in the mire of mediocrity. Nice guys on the job. Most nice guys initially come to counseling to deal with the way their life paradigm is affecting their intimate relationships. These relationship problems often overshadow the reality that they are equally dissatisfied with their job, career, or life direction in general. The dynamics that keep nice guys stuck in dysfunctional, unsatisfying relationships are often the same dynamics that keep them stuck in dysfunctional and unsatisfying vocations. There are numerous reasons why nice guys tend to be less than they can be in life, work, and career. These include fear, trying to do it right, trying to do everything themselves, self-sabotage, a distorted self-image, deprivation thinking, staying stuck in familiar but dysfunctional systems. Fear prevents nice guys from getting the life they want. If I were to identify one common factor at the core of every problem experienced by nice guys, it would be fear. Pretty much everything nice guys do or don't do is governed by fear. Their thoughts are funneled through fear-encrusted neurons in their brains. Their interactions are dictated by the politics of fear. It is fear that prevents a nice guy from demanding the raise he has been promised. It is fear that keeps a nice guy from going back to school to get the education or training he needs to pursue a truly fulfilling career. It is fear that prevents a nice guy from quitting a job he despises. It is fear that gets in the way of a nice guy starting the business of his dreams. It is fear that prevents a nice guy from living where he really wants to live and doing what he really wants to do. Nice guys are afraid of making a mistake, afraid of doing it wrong, afraid of failure, afraid of losing it all. Right alongside these fears of disaster is the paradoxical fear of success. Nice guys are typically afraid that if they are truly successful, they will be found out to be frauds. They won't be able to live up to people's expectations. They will be criticized. They won't be able to handle the increased expectations. They will lose control over their lives. They will do something to mess up everything. Rather than facing these fears, real or imagined, nice guys typically settle for operating at a fraction of their full potential. Trying to do it right prevents nice guys from getting the life they want. The essence of all life is evolution and change. In order for this process to occur naturally and completely in an individual, a person has to be willing to let go of control. Letting go allows the beautiful, serendipitous chaos of creation to resonate through oneself. The result is a dynamic, fulfilling life. Nice guys are obsessed with trying to keep their lives smooth and uneventful. They do this by trying to do it right and following the rules. Unfortunately, this life strategy is the most effective way to put a lid on any creative life energy. This lid kills their passion and prevents nice guys from living up to their full potential. Trying to do it right robs nice guys of their creativity and productivity. Striving for perfection keeps nice guys focused on their imperfections. Seeking external validation and approval keeps nice guys stuck in mediocrity. Attempting to hide flaws and mistakes prevents nice guys from taking risks or trying something new. Following the rules makes nice guys rigid, cautious, and fearful. It is because of these self-imposed limits that many nice guys are dissatisfied, bored, or unhappy with their life and vocation. Trying to do everything themselves prevents nice guys from getting the life they want. As children, nice guys did not get their needs met in timely, judicious ways. Some were neglected, some were used, some were abused, some were abandoned. All grew up believing that it was a bad or dangerous thing for them to have needs. All grew up convinced that if they were going to have anything in life, it would be up to them. Consequently, nice guys are terrible receivers. They are terrified of asking for help. They are completely miserable when others try to give to them. They have difficulty delegating to others. Because they believe they have to do it all themselves, nice guys rarely live up to their full potential. Nobody can be good at everything or succeed all on their own. Nice guys believe they should be able to. They might be jacks of all trades, but they are typically masters of none. This childhood conditioning ensures that they will never be all they can be in any area of life. Self-sabotage prevents nice guys from getting the life they want. Because of their fear of success, nice guys are masters of self-sabotage. They undermine their success by wasting time, making excuses, not finishing projects, caretaking other people, having too many projects going at once, getting caught up in chaotic relationships, procrastinating, not setting boundaries. Nice guys are typically good at appearing competent. But to be really great, to really rise to the top, invites too much unwanted attention and scrutiny. The bright lights of success threaten to illuminate their self-perceived cracks and flaws. Consequently, nice guys find many creative ways to make sure they are never too successful. If they don't start something, they won't fail. If they don't finish something, they won't be criticized. If they have too much going on at once, they won't have to do any one thing well. If they have enough good excuses, people won't expect too much of them. A distorted self-image prevents nice guys from getting the life they want. Because their needs were not met in a timely, judicious fashion in childhood, nice guys developed a distorted view of themselves. With a naive, immature logic, they came to the conclusion that if their needs were not important, neither were they. This is the basis of their toxic shame. At their core, all nice guys believe they are not important or good enough. If a nice guy was called on to take care of a critical, needy, or dependent parent, he received a double dose of toxic shame. A child believes he should be able to please a critical parent, fix the problems of a depressed parent, and meet the needs of a smothering parent. Unfortunately, he can't. As a result of their inability to fix, please, or take care of one or more parents, many nice guys developed a deep-seated sense of inadequacy. They believed they should be able to do the job. Nevertheless, they never could seem to do it right or good enough. Mom was still depressed. Dad was still critical. This internalized sense of inadequacy and defectiveness is carried into adulthood. Some nice guys compensate by trying to do everything right. They hope that by doing so, no one will ever find out how inadequate they are. Other nice guys just give up before they try. This feeling of inadequacy prevents nice guys from making themselves visible, taking chances, or trying something new. It keeps them in the same old rut, never seeing how talented and intelligent they really are. Everyone around them can see these things, but their distorted childhood lenses won't let them accurately see their true potential and ability. The result of this distorted self-image is an emotional and cognitive glass ceiling. This invisible lid prevents nice guys from being all they can be. If they do try to rise above it, they bump their heads and tumble down to more familiar territory. Deprivation thinking prevents nice guys from getting the life they want. Not having their needs adequately met in childhood created a belief for nice guys that there wasn't enough of what they needed to go around. This deprivation experience became the lens through which they viewed the world. This paradigm of scarcity and deprivation makes nice guys manipulative and controlling. It causes them to believe they better hang on to what they've got and not take too many chances. It leads them to resent other people who seem to have what they lack. Because of their deprivation thinking, nice guys think small. They don't believe they deserve to have good things. They find all kinds of ways to make sure their view of the world is never challenged. They settle for scraps and think it is all they deserve. They create all kinds of rationalizations to explain why they will never have what they really desire. Because of their self-fulfilling beliefs, nice guys rarely live up to their potential or get what they really want in life. Staying stuck in dysfunctional but familiar systems prevents nice guys from getting the life they want. As stated in previous chapters, two major factors prevent nice guys from getting what they want in love. The first is that they tend to recreate familiar, yet dissatisfying relationships. They find partners who will help them create the same dysfunctional kinds of relationships they experienced as children. These men then frequently see themselves as being victims to the dysfunction of their partners. Nice guys have a difficult time seeing that they were attracted to these people for a reason. Second, nice guys rarely experience the kind of relationships they want because they are bad enders. When a healthy person would pack up and move on, nice guys just keep doing more of the same, hoping that something will miraculously change. Nice guys aren't much different in their jobs. They are attracted to careers and work situations that allow them to recreate the dysfunctional roles, relationships, and rules of their childhood. They often see themselves as helpless victims to these situations. Rarely do they see why they need these systems to be the way they are, and that they have the choice to leave. Unconsciously recreating familiar family patterns in their jobs and careers keeps nice guys stuck and dissatisfied. While they are perpetuating the dysfunction of their childhood, they rarely do what they really want or rise to the top of their chosen vocation. Realizing your passion and potential. I frequently tell the men in my No More Mr. Nice Guy groups that my goal is for every one of them to leave the group a millionaire. This statement really has very little to do with money or material wealth. It is about discovering passion and living up to potential. As stated above, the nice guys I counsel are generally intelligent, talented men. As these men work on recovering from the nice guy syndrome, they begin to accept themselves just as they are. This acceptance of the self allows them to embrace their passions and face their fears. The formation of a more accurate view of the self and the world allows the abundance of the universe to begin flowing freely into their lives. Sometimes this takes the form of money. Sometimes it takes the form of love. Sometimes it takes the form of sex. Sometimes it takes the form of the bright lights of fame. Sometimes it includes all of the above. The remainder of this chapter presents a strategy to help recovering nice guys become all they can be. The following pages present a plan that has already helped countless nice guys discover their passion and live up to their potential. It can do the same for you. Facing fears allows nice guys to get the life they want. Charlie could have been the poster child for passionless, underachieving nice guys. When I first met Charlie, he was stuck in a job he hated and living a life characterized by mediocrity and fear. Charlie had completed his engineering degree a couple of years before, yet he was still working at the same job he had held before starting college. Charlie's employers had promised him a big promotion upon graduation. When they failed to keep their promise, Charlie just stifled his resentment and kept on doing the same old thing he had always done. Charlie's single passion was flying. In spite of warnings of disaster from his mother, he had begun taking flying lessons after he finished college. Though Charlie dreamed of earning his pilot's license, he never seemed to be able to complete the necessary requirements to achieve his goal. A woman at his work introduced Charlie to my website. When he read the description of a nice guy, he was mortified. He couldn't figure out how someone could know him so well. It took him 6 months before he worked up the nerve to send me an email. It took him another 2 months to send me a second. From the first time Charlie looked at my website, he knew he needed to join a men's group, but the idea of being that vulnerable terrified him. It was at that point that Charlie made a decision that changed his life. Charlie decided that if something frightened him that much, he needed to face his fear and do it. Little did he know then, but that decision was just the beginning of a journey that would lead Charlie toward the rediscovery of his passion and purpose in life. Over the next year and a half, Charlie lived by one credo. If he was afraid of something, he confronted that fear. Charlie's progress was slow but steady. Basically, he crawled until he could walk. He took baby steps until he could run. Once he got going, there was no stopping him. Over a period of about 18 months, Charlie took several steps toward rediscovering his passion and purpose in life. He became more and more active in his No More Mr. Nice Guy men's group, revealing himself and confronting fellow group members. He began looking at the neglect he experienced and the distorted fear-based messages he received in his family. He asked his father to come to counseling with him, where he confronted him on his unavailability and lack of concern for his well-being in childhood. He quit blaming his lack of money for flying lessons on his girlfriend. He changed flying schools when his current school was unable to provide him with the type of instruction and equipment he needed. He began interviewing for jobs that took advantage of his engineering degree. He began confronting his feelings of inadequacy, family messages about playing it safe, and distorted beliefs about his qualifications as an engineer. He confronted his girlfriend, whom he was initially terrified of, about her lack of participation in household responsibilities. He took his solo flight and got his pilot's license. He allowed his men's group to take him out for his birthday to a restaurant where he faced his fear of being the center of attention. He applied for and got a job with an engineering firm that expressed a belief that he was capable, talented, and had something to offer their company. When Charlie told the group about getting the job, "I realized that I had witnessed a metamorphosis of epic proportions. Charlie had gone from being an introverted, frightened, and passive nice guy to an evolving man with passion and purpose. I asked Charlie to send me an email with his formula for success." Here is what he wrote. "Bob, here is roughly how I arrived at the new job. One, very first, before anything else could happen, I had to stop being a victim. Two, I began by setting boundaries. At first they were small ones, and they grew with time. Three, from the boundaries being set and respected, I started believing in myself. Four, honesty came along somewhere during this time. Five, believing that I am an adult. I have an education, and I am qualified to take on the role of an industrial engineer. Six, I always knew that my previous employer was dysfunctional and that it was comfortable for a reason. When I finally realized and accepted that I did not need that system to survive, I could finally move on. Charlie." Charting their own path allows nice guys to get the life they want. Most folks, nice guys included, do not consciously take responsibility for creating the kind of life they want. Most people just accept where they are and act as if they have little power in shaping an exciting, productive, and fulfilling life. When I talk with nice guys about taking charge of their lives, most have a difficult time wrapping their brain around the concept. It just doesn't fit their paradigm that they can make choices and act to make these choices a reality. I encourage nice guys to visualize creating a life where they do what they love and get paid for it. Most of them have difficulty with this concept. They act as if I am asking them to believe a fairy tale. Occasionally, they will dismiss the idea with the excuse, "Not everybody can be lucky like you," referring to me, "and have a job they really love and get paid well for it too." For a while, I accepted this logic, until it dawned on me that the life I was living had nothing to do with luck. Earning a PhD involved a conscious decision, persistence, and hard work, not luck. Building a counseling practice involved facing fears, quitting a secure, well-paying job, making sacrifices, working a second job to pay bills, learning by trial and error, and living through a period of poverty, not luck. Developing my skills as a therapist involved a commitment to personal growth, constant evolution, and a financial investment in my own therapeutic process, not luck. Writing a book, building a website, and getting published required persistence and the confrontation of numerous fears, not luck. I'm not anything special. I'm an ordinary guy with ordinary talents. I have many of the same fears as the nice guys with whom I work. I don't have any special talent or skill that the majority of my clients don't have. What's the difference? A conscious decision to face fears. A conscious decision to not settle for mediocrity. A conscious decision to make my own rules. Think about the people you respect or look up to. Most probably started with nothing, but still found ways to create interesting, productive, and passionate lives. These people charted their own paths and made their own rules. What makes them different? Most are just ordinary people who took charge of their lives. Here's the good news. If they can do it, so can you. One of my favorite affirmations is, what one man can do, another man can do. Think about it. If others have taken charge and created lives worth emulating, so can you. The only thing stopping you from having the kind of life you really want is you. It is time to start charting your own path, making your own rules, and making your dreams a reality. Breaking Free, Activity 40. Look over the list below. Choose one of the items and name a tangible fear from your life. Write down how you will confront that specific issue. Then, take a small step toward facing that fear. Ask someone to encourage and support you. Don't try to do it alone. Remember, no matter what happens, you will handle it. Ask for a raise or promotion. Quit an unsatisfying job. Start your own business. Go back to school. Confront a conflict situation. Promote an idea or something you have created. Pursue a lifelong goal. Spend more time with a hobby or interest. Breaking Free, Activity 41. What do you really want in life? What prevents you from making it happen? Write down three things you want to make happen in your life. Then write a personal affirmation that will take you where you want to go, and post it on a sheet of paper where you can see it. Share your dreams and your affirmation with a safe person. Letting go of trying to do it right allows nice guys to get the life they want. This book began as a few chapters I planned to write to give to the men in my first No More Mr. Nice Guy group. Initially, when there was no agenda or goal, my writing was a spontaneous recording of my growing insight into the nice guy syndrome. Before long, clients and family members began suggesting that I write a book. It seemed like a logical extension of what I was already doing, so the idea made perfect sense. It was at that time that something began to change. Rather than being just a few insights and illustrations written for the benefit of a handful of clients, my effort became directed at producing something that would be deserving of publication and widespread distribution. I began hearing people suggest things like bestseller, Oprah, and get rich. What was once an effortless labor of love began to falter under the weight of expectation. In order to live up to the lofty standards people were suggesting, my book had better be good. Not just good, perfect. With that agenda, I labored for 6 years to complete No More Mr. Nice Guy. The most common question I was asked by friends and family during this time was, "When are you going to finish your book?" Over the years, the manuscript went through at least 3 major revisions, as well as extensive editing. Numerous factors contributed to the length of time it took to finish the book. But the number one reason was that I thought it had to be perfect. I thought the book had to be perfect to be published. I thought it had to be perfect for anyone to buy it. I thought it had to be perfect for it to help anyone. Unfortunately, this gross misperception had a number of detrimental consequences. I believed I had to write everything I knew about the nice guy syndrome. The original manuscript of this book was probably 4 times its present length. I believed I had to be an eloquent writer. I believed the text had to be flawless. I went to therapy to find out why I couldn't finish my book. My children became disillusioned, predicting that I never would finish. My wife half-seriously threatened to leave me if I didn't finish. Finally, after years of frustration, I had a breakthrough. A very wise person suggested that I give myself permission to never publish the book. I felt an immediate sense of relief. I realized that I had gotten away from my original goal, to write a few insights that would help a few men live better lives. Once I let go of the burden of having to get published, be a best-selling author, and appear on Oprah, everything changed. I went back to my original agenda. From then on, when I wrote, I only asked myself one thing. Will this help my clients find answers to their problems? I also kept reminding myself that my clients would never get a chance to benefit from my insight if I never finished the book. Once I gave up the belief that no more Mr. Nice Guy had to be perfect, things began to fall into place. I completed the book. Clients reported that it was changing their lives. Therapists began to request copies for their clients. Radio talk show hosts and newspaper and magazine writers began contacting me for interviews. I hired an agent. Publishers began pursuing me. Trying to do it right only sucked the life out of No More Mr. Nice Guy. Letting go, and letting it just be good enough, set me free to embrace my passion and create something of lasting value. This same principle applies to every area of the recovering nice guy's life. Breaking Free, Activity 42. How does your perfectionism or need to do it right get in the way of realizing your passion and potential? Pick one thing that you have always wanted to do. Write a book. Turn your hobby into a business. Move. Go back to school. Fully embrace a talent. Now ask yourself the question, if you knew ahead of time that this endeavor would be a success, would you hesitate to do it? Would this knowledge set you free from the belief that you have to do it perfectly? Would this knowledge motivate you to get started or complete what you have already begun? What risks would you be willing to take if you knew ahead of time that there was no way for you to fail? What are you waiting for? Let go of the need to do it perfectly and just do it. Learning to ask for help allows nice guys to get the life they want. A major reason nice guys frequently fail to live up to their potential is that they believe they have to do everything themselves. Phil is a good example. Phil's goal in life was to be rich. He seemed to have a lot of things going for him. He was good-looking, intelligent, outgoing, and funny. Yet Phil always seemed to fall way short of achieving his lofty goals and dreams. A number of things got in the way. Taking shortcuts, procrastination, and insecurities about whether he deserved to get what he really wanted. Perhaps Phil's greatest roadblock was his difficulty asking people for help. Phil had a number of faulty core beliefs about people helping him. He didn't believe he deserved to get what he wanted. He didn't believe his needs were important to other people. He believed the surest way not to get his needs met was to ask in clear and direct ways. One day, in his No More Mr. Nice Guy men's group, Phil was lamenting about the lack of sex in his relationship with his wife. I asked Phil if he asked his wife to have sex with him. He said no. I asked him if he believed his wife wanted to have sex with him. To this he also replied in the negative. I told Phil that I thought his lack of sex was symptomatic of a bigger problem in his life, him not thinking his needs were important and not believing that other people wanted to help him meet his needs. I suggested that changing his beliefs about his sexual needs might be the place to begin changing core beliefs that prevented him from having other things he wanted in life. The next week, Phil was grinning from ear to ear. "My wife and I had sex," he beamed. The group shared in his enthusiasm. They wanted to know how it happened. "I asked," was Phil's simple reply. I questioned Phil how his wife felt about having sex with him. "She was fine about it," he replied. "She said she likes having sex with me, but that I hadn't asked in a long time, so she didn't think I was interested." A week later, Phil told the group he was dreading asking his father-in-law to borrow money to get the old single-pane windows replaced on his house. Some of the group members began asking questions about the cost. Some shared that they had done that kind of project before. I suggested that Phil ask the group to help him. It was like pulling teeth, but Phil asked the men if they could help him replace his windows. The members of the group responded unanimously that they would be glad to. About a month later, the men got together at Phil's house and had the equivalent of an old-fashioned barn raising. These two experiences had a tremendous impact on Phil. He began to see that his needs were important, that people wanted to help him meet his needs, and that the surest way of getting people to help was to ask. Phil began to build on this new paradigm. Within a few weeks, he shared a plan with the group to start his own business. A friend of the family had offered to help him get started in his own landscaping business. This prospect especially excited him because the seasonal work would allow him to teach snowboarding during the winter, a lifelong dream. An old friend offered to be his financial backer. His wife volunteered to look for a job that paid health insurance benefits. Men in the group offered to help him write a business plan and set up his bookkeeping. As long as Phil tried to do everything himself, he struggled to get what he wanted. Once he started asking for help and letting people be there for him, his life began to turn around. He is now headed in the direction of creating the kind of life and vocation he has always dreamed of. Breaking Free, Activity 43. Do you believe your needs are important? Do you believe other people want to help you meet your needs? On a sheet of paper, make a list of helpers you have in your life right now. These can be friends and family members. They can be professionals, such as doctors, lawyers, therapists, and CPAs. After making the list, answer the following questions. What kind of helpers do you still need? How can you use these helpers more effectively? How do you prevent these people from helping you? Start looking for opportunities to ask these people for help. Build networks. Before asking for help, repeat the affirmation. This person wants to help me get my needs met. Identifying self-sabotaging behaviors allows nice guys to get the life they want. As mentioned earlier in the chapter, nice guys find numerous creative ways to sabotage their success in life. They waste time, they procrastinate, they start things but don't finish, they spend too much time fixing other people's problems, they distract themselves with trivial pursuits, they create chaos, they make excuses. Sal is a good example of this. Sal was raised by a passive father and a schizophrenic mother. Neither parent was available to pay attention to him or meet his needs. At a young age, he had to take responsibility for the welfare of his younger brother. Sal had virtually no options as a child. When he felt frightened or overwhelmed, he would just hunker down and trudge ahead with dogged determination. As an adult, Sal ran a body shop for his uncle. His uncle was a cheap, short-sighted, marginally involved business owner. It was Sal's job to create a profitable business with the limited resources and dissatisfied employees his uncle provided. Sal actually operated on the assumption that this feat could be successfully accomplished. Every week, when Sal came to Men's Group, his first order of business was to pop a couple of Tylenol to quiet the stress headache created by trying to negotiate an impossible situation at work. On one occasion, I asked Sal if he wanted to explore options for his work situation. "What's the use?" he replied. "There's nothing that can be done." For about 15 minutes, group members asked questions and proposed options. Sal looked like a man undergoing a root canal with no anesthetic. "Could you talk with your uncle and let him know how difficult your job is with the resources he gives you?" "I've tried that. He doesn't care." "Could you offer profit sharing to motivate your employees?" "My uncle is too cheap. He would never go for it." "Could you hire an assistant to help with the workload?" "We tried that once and it didn't work out." "Could you get out of management and go back to painting cars?" "I would make more money, but it is too toxic." "Could you get out of the auto body business and do something else?" "Like what? I've got a mortgage, a wife, and two kids. How am I supposed to start over now?" "What is your passion, your dream job?" This time, Sal paused for a moment before answering. "I've always wanted to teach martial arts." "There is no way that it could ever happen, though. I'd have to work evenings and weekends. My wife just wouldn't go for that, and I'd be away from the kids too much." With each question asked and each option proposed, Sal grew noticeably tenser. His eyes reflected a terror, as if he was being interrogated by Gestapo agents with cattle prods and ice picks. When it became apparent that exploring possible options only aggravated his fear and caused him to shut down further, the group members mercifully backed off. Later, Sal referred to the experience as being reamed by the group. In most situations, nice guys aren't victims to others. They victimize themselves. By his attitudes and actions, Sal all but guaranteed that he would never experience any kind of success or satisfaction in his job. It was much more familiar and comfortable to stay stuck in a stressful, no-win situation. Every nice guy with whom I have worked has at some point had to make a conscious decision to stop sabotaging himself. This is a crucial aspect in recovery from the nice guy syndrome. In order to start getting what they want in life, work, and career, recovering nice guys have to make the conscious decision to get out of their own way. One way of doing this is by changing the way they think about change. This begins with nice guys becoming aware of why they unconsciously create so many barriers that keep them feeling stuck. A mortgage, a wife, a lack of a degree, debt, children are all just excuses. Making significant life changes doesn't require chucking all these things. It means seeing them for what they really are, excuses, and taking small steps in the direction one wants to be going. For example, Sal could begin teaching martial arts one evening per week. He could begin working at paying down personal debt to enable him to change jobs in the future. He could refocus time spent on trivial, unsatisfying activities. Breaking Free, Activity 44. Identify how you sabotage yourself. Once you have identified your patterns, determine what you have to do differently to get what you really want. Review each item below and identify specific behaviors that will help you stop sabotaging yourself and achieve your goals. Focus. Do it now. Accept good enough rather than perfect. Finish what you start. Don't start new projects until the old ones are completely finished. Don't make excuses. Detach from other people's problems. Share your strategy with a safe person. Check in with them on a regular basis to monitor how you are doing. Failing to do this part would be an effective way to sabotage yourself. Breaking Free, Activity 45. Take a few moments and close your eyes. Take a couple of deep breaths and exhale slowly. Clear your mind. Once you are relaxed, picture yourself living in an abundant world. In this abundant world, there are no restraints or limitations. Good things flow past you continuously. Imagine every abundant thing you have ever desired. Car, home, friends, love, joy, wealth, success, peace of mind, challenge. Visualize yourself living your life surrounded by this abundance. Repeat this visualization several times a day until it begins to feel real to you. Open your arms, your heart, and your mind. Get out of the way and let it happen. Developing a more accurate view of the world allows nice guys to get the life they want. Ever wonder why other people seem to have so much more than you? More money, a better job, a nicer car, a prettier wife. Do you envy these people? Do you resent them for having what you don't? Do you wonder when it will be your turn? Due to their early life experiences, nice guys tend to be ruled by deprivation thinking. They believe there is only so much to go around, and if someone else already has a lot, there is less for them. Nice guys have a difficult time comprehending that we live in an abundant, ever-expanding universe. They tend to see the goodies as being in short supply. They hang on tightly to what they've got, fearing there won't be more when it is gone. They believe they have to control and manipulate to ensure that what little is out there won't go away. They play it safe, not trusting that their needs will always be abundantly met. This paradigm of scarcity can be illustrated by a nice guy named Russell. As a successful salesman, Russell earned a comfortable six-figure income. He religiously put 40% of his take-home pay into savings and investments. He kept a minimum balance of $30,000 in his checking account. In spite of his ability to create financial wealth, Russell was controlled by his deprivation thinking. Russell was so afraid of financial ruin that he would not allow his wife to buy a $9 video for his children at Costco if it wasn't in the budget. Russell's deprivation thinking in regard to money was a reflection of his view of the world in general. His father was miserly and rigid. He seemed to single Russell out for critical treatment while heaping praise and favor on his two brothers. Later, before he died, his father cut Russell out of his will and gave Russell's share to the church. It is no wonder that Russell viewed the world through lenses clouded by deprivation. When we come to see the world as a place of abundance, we come to realize that there is plenty for everyone. Everything we need is flowing by us. All we have to do is get out of the way of our own small thinking and let it come. Look around at the wealth, the cars people drive, the houses they live in, the trips they take. You can't argue with the sheer material abundance that can be created in our world. If other people are living full, abundant lives, why not you? Remember, what one man can do, another man can do. If one man can make $1 million, why can't you? If one man can start the business of his dreams, why can't you? If one man can drive a Mercedes, why can't you? If one man can quit a crummy job and find a better one, why can't you? If one man can be a snowboarding instructor, why can't you? Unfortunately, the world can't give us something that we're not ready to receive. Since deprivation thinking keeps a person holding tightly to what he already has, there is no receptivity for receiving more. As Phil found out, when we ask for what we want and expect to receive it, it will come, one way or another. Breaking Free, Activity 46. Read over the list of rules below. Try a few of them on for size. Add to the list your own personal rules. Write these rules on note cards and put them where you can see them every day. If it frightens you, do it. Don't settle. Every time you settle, you get exactly what you settled for. Put yourself first. No matter what happens, you will handle it. Whatever you do, do it 100%. If you do what you have always done, you will get what you have always got. You are the only person on this planet responsible for your needs, wants, and happiness. Ask for what you want. If what you are doing isn't working, try something different. Be clear and direct. Learn to say no. Don't make excuses. If you are an adult, you are old enough to make your own rules. Let people help you. Be honest with yourself. Do not let anyone treat you badly. No one, ever. Remove yourself from a bad situation instead of waiting for the situation to change. Don't tolerate the intolerable. Stop blaming. Victims never succeed. Live with integrity. Decide what feels right to you, then do it. Accept the consequences of your actions. Be good to yourself. Think abundance. Face difficult situations and conflict head on. Don't do anything in secret. Do it now. Be willing to let go of what you have so you can get what you want. Have fun. If you are not having fun, something is wrong. Give yourself room to fail. There are no mistakes, only learning experiences. Control is an illusion. Let go. Let life happen. Get the life you want. The No More Mr. Nice Guy strategy for success. Nice guys believe there is a set of rules that govern all behavior. They are convinced that if they can figure out these rules and successfully abide by them, they will have a smooth, happy life. They also believe that there are dire consequences for failing to discern and obey these rules. Discovering passion and purpose requires figuring out what works and what doesn't. Mature, successful people establish their own rules. These rules are measured by only one standard. Do they work? Over the years, the men in my No More Mr. Nice Guy groups have discovered a number of rules that work for them. These rules have helped them discover their passion and live up to their potential. These rules have helped them create the kind of life and vocation they really desire. It is time to start getting what you want. Breaking free from the nice guy syndrome will allow you to discover your true passion and potential. By taking responsibility for creating the kind of life you really want, you can become all that you were meant to be. Epilogue. It took me 6 years to write this book. During this time, I have worked with countless nice guys and their partners. I have averaged 3 No More Mr. Nice Guy men's groups per week. In group time alone, that's over 1,800 hours of working with nice guys. During this time, I have observed many exciting and profound things. I have watched countless men go from being helpless, passive, controlling, and resentful victims to becoming empowered, integrated males. I have seen numerous relationships dramatically improve, and I've seen just as many die an overdue death. I've listened to unsolicited testimonials and read letters of gratitude from both men and women about the changes they have experienced in their lives. I have received responses from men and women all over the world who have seen themselves or someone they love in the description of the nice guy on my website. Based on observing all of these things, here is my greatest discovery. The tools and insights presented in No More Mr. Nice Guy work. Having finished reading this book, I encourage you to start again at the beginning. Take the time to do the breaking free exercises. If you have not already done so, find a safe person or group to assist you on your journey of recovery from the nice guy syndrome. If you are in a relationship, ask your partner to read the book. Share with him or her the insights you are discovering about yourself. Working the program of recovery presented in No More Mr. Nice Guy is one of the greatest gifts you can give yourself and your loved ones. As you learn to approve of yourself, you will discover within you an unimaginable ability to love and accept love and to live life to its fullest. This kind of expansiveness is initially frightening, but it is the essence of who you are and what you are meant to be. With this discovery of your true self comes unlimited freedom. Freedom to be just who you are. Freedom to stop seeking approval. Freedom to start getting what you want.
The End. You've been listening to No More Mr. Nice Guy, a proven guide for getting what you want in love, life, and sex by Dr. Robert A. Glover, narrated by Robert O'Keefe.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.